90% of the world's pharmaceuticals are generic drugs, less expensive versions of brand name drugs made legally after the patents on them have lapsed. 40% of the generics are manufactured in India. 80% of the active ingredients in all drugs are made in either China or India, thanks to globalization. Generic drugs are required to be bioequivalent. But investigative journalist Catherine Eban spent a decade uncovering fraud and poor manufacturing conditions in the overseas plants producing the generics. Her book is called Bottle of Lies, the inside story of the genetic drug boom. And she's with me now. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How did problems with generic drugs come to your notice?
Well, I've been an investigative journalist for several decades, and I've covered pharmaceuticals and public health. But it was back in 2008 when I got a phone call from actually a radio show host in the U.S., and he does a pharmacy call-in show. He said he was getting flooded with complaints from patients who had recently been switched to generic drugs. They were complaining about side effects, relapses, medical setbacks, and he had brought those complaints to the FDA, which is our regulator, the Food and Drug Administration. And basically, officials there kind of made light of it. You know, they said they thought it was probably psychosomatic, that when pills looked different, patients got upset. So my caller, Joe Graydon, did not believe that. And he posed this question to me, which I had no idea at the time was going to take me on this 10-year reporting odyssey. But he just said to me, you know, what is wrong with the drugs? And I started reporting on that question and ended up in a journey that took me literally around the globe to try to answer it.
We, too, are told in New Zealand by our agencies that the problems that people have with generics is partly because of the nocebo effect or media drawing their attention to the change, and therefore it's in their mind. Are you convinced that this is not the case?
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced, and I know because I've exposed what is wrong with the drugs, and I think that any patient who hears that, their next question should be, well, have you actually tested the drugs? If you're telling me it's in my mind, have you actually tested the drugs to see if that is not the case? Because, you know, what I uncovered in these far-flung manufacturing plants in India and China is endemic fraud. These companies are racing to be first onto the market. They're racing to get approvals from as many global regulators as possible. And so what they're doing is altering their data to make sure that it meets FDA specifications, regulator specifications. And they're trying to fast track their drugs onto the market. So they're skipping crucial manufacturing steps. What that amounts to for consumers is that untested or substandard drugs are being launched onto the market with the claim that they meet the proper standards.
You focus on the big Indian generics manufacturer Ranbaxy, which ceased to exist in 2014, but you make it a case study for generic manufacturers who falsify lab test records, for example. You wrote a 2013 article for Fortune magazine about Ranbaxy. Did you have a hand in bringing it down?
I mean, I think that my reporting probably played some role in the fallout of that case. But the case was built on documents that were brought forward by a very heroic whistleblower named Dinesh Thakkar. And he is one of the leading characters, or the main character in my book, Bottle of Lies. Many people inside Rambaxi knew what was going on, that they were, wildly falsifying their data in order to get these approvals. He brought his records, his documents, to the FDA, and it was on the basis of that that there was an 8-year investigation, which led to the company pleading guilty to 7 felonies for faking data.
He's a very interesting character, and in many ways, the classic whistleblower, yes.
Well, he really is the classic whistleblower because, unlike other people at Rambaxi who were kind of upset by what was going on and didn't do anything, he couldn't sleep and he did something about it. He reached out to regulators around the world to try to get somebody interested in stopping this company. And he really got no attention until he wrote directly to the commissioner of the FDA with a lot of specifics and said, "I plead with you to put a stop to this crime." And that is when he got into dialogue with FDA officials who ultimately launched a criminal investigation.
As a kind of a sidebar, he very admirable individual, also obsessive, and the cost of this process to his life and his marriage and his family was high, but he was that kind of guy, right?
Yes. And I think even his marriage broke up. The book tells the story of, this sort of heroic and very lonely battle that he fought. But I think even knowing the cost, he would do it all over again. He couldn't bear the thought that this company was knowingly releasing substandard drugs into the market all over the world, but particularly to some of the world's most vulnerable patients, including AIDS patients in Africa.
And is this part of the dual track production that you explore?
Yeah, and that is really one of the most troubling findings, I think, in all of my reporting, which is that the big exporting generic companies routinely practice a kind of manufacturing that's called dual track production, which essentially amounts to a manufacturing standard of whatever you can get away with. So what they do is they take their worst drugs, their most poorly made drugs with the cheapest active ingredients, the most manufacturing shortcuts, toxic impurities, you name it. They take those drugs and they sell them into the least regulated markets.
You mean the drugs that they've tested and found wanting, they put in a special bucket saying for third world?
Yes, that's right. And in fact, they call it ROW, which is rest of world. Sometimes they make it in different factories altogether, or sometimes they just send drugs that they couldn't unload into any other market into the third world. Yeah.
Let's talk about the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which has the task of making sure that drugs are manufactured properly and generics have bioequivalency. All of this is due to the impotence of the FDA and the ability of this kind of negligence and/or corruption to flourish, correct?
You can definitely look at it that way. Our FDA is the gold standard, really, for all the regulators in the world. So whatever the FDA does and whatever decisions they make, a lot of regulators around the world follow our lead. But I was really shocked when I began looking into it and found essentially a regulatory honor system, because our FDA, first of all, when they vet manufacturer applications, they are not testing the drugs. They are reviewing company data. But of course, as I uncovered, much of the data is false. So then what? Well, they inspect plants overseas. But unlike their inspections in the US, they give these drug plants overseas months of advance notice that they're coming. So, of course, what do you think the plants do? They clean up their facilities, they invent, shred, alter documents, they literally deploy data fabrication teams to go into the plants and just make up documents. So there, what these companies have is a facade of compliance. And then our regulator, the FDA, is telling US patients and regulators around the world that everything is fine in these plants. But the reality is really quite different.
Why does the FDA not do unannounced visits to overseas plants?
It's mind-boggling, really, and we know that they can do it if they want to because they did do it. My reporting exposed that they ran a pilot program about a year and a half of doing unannounced inspections in India. And once they did that, the rate of serious findings rose by about 60%. And the findings were really incredible. I mean, there were plants that were supposed to operate with perfect sterility under aseptic manufacturing conditions, and they're supposed to test the environment throughout their plants, the air, the water, the surfaces to make sure there's no microbial contamination. One of the things that the FDA did once it started doing unannounced inspections, they discovered some of these plants were completely faking their sterility data, inventing it from whole cloth. They weren't doing the testing at all. So you think about plants that are making vials of insulin, injectable oncology drugs, for the most immune compromised patients, and they're just not testing for microbial contamination at all. So the FDA was doing unannounced inspections. They were very successful, and then they stopped. They just stopped it and they went back to pre-announced inspections. So you might be interested in the question of why. Why wouldn't the FDA want to know what's going on in these plants? I think one of the answers is that if they really know what's happening, then they have to put import alerts on these plants. They have to restrict the flow of drugs. And of course, we're all dependent on cheap drugs. So, the question began to form in my mind, do they really want to know what's going on?
Because the United States, for one, is effectively saving trillions of dollars
Right.
by using generics instead of brand name drugs.
That's absolutely right.
Did
And
you
then the
find,
other
sorry, did you find any evidence at all of the FDA being pressured or persuaded or anything other than lobbied to go easy on the overseas manufacturing of generics?
Well, there is political pressure. There is diplomatic pressure, right? In the US, we can aggressively inspect plants, and there's no State Department looking over their shoulder to say, hey, go easy. But that was not the case once you're dealing with foreign governments, where a whole host of other considerations may be in effect.
And do you think that's the case with both India and China?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it.
Just talk to me for a moment about the specific damage that have been done by dodgy generics in your country. You talk about the Cleveland Clinic incidents.
Well, what my reporting has made clear is that there are patients who are getting generic drugs that have toxic impurities in them. They have dangerous particulates. They may have unapproved ingredients, or they're just plain and simple not bioequivalent. They don't work the same in the body as the brand name drug, which they are supposed to. So if you say, wow, that's what's happening in the US, but we're one of the best markets in the world. So what are other people around the world in other places getting? They're getting worse drugs, right? I did reporting in Africa. Doctors in Ghana told me that they routinely had to double and triple doses of generic drugs just to try to get a therapeutic effect because the drugs don't work.
Given that bad drugs have come from Western brand name manufacturers too, I mean, Merck's deception about Vioxx and GlaxoSmithKline about Avandia and also Paxil, all involved data fudging. Do you not think that you may be exaggerating the flaws of the generic manufacturers in favor of the brand name manufacturers?
Well, first of all, I don't think I'm exaggerating the problems with the generic drugs, since I had very clear documentary evidence of them. You know, as someone who has reported on the brand name drug industry for many years, and have exposed a lot of frauds there myself, what I had seen was a great deal of fraud in the sales and marketing of drugs. So, for example, expanding the intended use of a drug. And that is what we saw that has driven the opioid crisis in the U.S., for example. So there's plenty of greed. There's plenty of fraud. I think in this case, what we've seen very specifically is literally the alteration of laboratory quality data in order to get more rapid market approvals. So that is something that, you know, when the FDA investigators have uncovered that, their inclination is that they've never seen anything like it before.
Of course, India and the Indian medicines industry, the drug industry, which is huge, is a kind of outrage. The Drug Controller General of India, the DCGI, calls your book fiction filled, and the Commerce, as it would, I suppose, and the Commerce Ministry of India blamed vested interests for discrediting the generics industry. You've been to India on a book tour, have you not?
Yeah, I came back a couple of weeks ago, and in fact, those articles, articles began appearing shortly before I was to leave for India, basically saying that the Modi government was going to take action against my book, though there were no specifics. I'm happy to say that didn't happen. But, you know, what I encountered there was a real gratitude from readers who want to know why their own government is not protecting them from these bad drugs, because, you know, Indian manufacturers are dumping some of the worst drugs they make into the Indian market, because they know that Indian regulators are not going to, they're not going to review the data, and they're not going to test the drugs. So in some cases, they just wholesale make up all the data. And, you know, Indian readers and patients, and of course, everyone is a patient, potentially, they're outraged. So I was quite surprised to find that, you know, the book is a number one bestseller in India. They want to know what is going on.
When you were doing your investigation in India, you were subject to quite a lot of surveillance and harassment by, well, I presume, the government, were you not?
You know, yes, but actually I was surveilled even more closely in China, where the government hacked my cell phone. So obviously, you know, this is, and they, I should say, they hacked my cell phone and sent me a threatening image of a security official literally surveilling me from my hotel lobby, you know, which was, I interpreted it as a very clear warning that they were watching what I was doing while I was there. This is big money. I mean, these are huge industries. And now India and China are supplying pharmaceuticals to the entire world. So, you know, often the government's interests and the industry's interests are quite intertwined.
You have been accused of picking on India and China, of fueling a certain kind of xenophobia. What's your response to that?
Well, actually, I see it quite differently. I see that I'm exposing wrongdoing wherever it happens, but that the book is really a benefit to patients in those countries, right? I mean, they're getting drugs that are worse than we're getting. And so this is really about trying not to eliminate generic drugs, but to try to guarantee their quality. And how do you do that? You need a system of transparent, verifiable standards. And the problem is that the regulators of the world are relying on company-sponsored data. So, you know, patients deserve better. And our regulators have failed. I mean, the book is practically just as critical of our own FDA regulators here as it is of the Indian government or manufacturing plants there.
In New Zealand, of course, we I don't know whether you know our system, we have an agency called Pharmac. It's got a spending cap on it. It chooses which drugs that we will have subsidized and which ones we will not. And it often replaces the branded drugs for the generics. Mm-hmm. I mean, recently it ceased its subsidy for, about 10 years ago, to be frank, ceased its subsidy for Losec and gave Dr. Reddy's sole supply for a generic substitute. There was quite a lot of misgiving about that on the part of patients. Do you know anything about Dr. Reddy's or Losec?
Well, you know, I don't know specifically about Losec, but Dr. Reddy's is indeed in my book as one of these companies that has been found by FDA investigators to have been playing fast and loose with their laboratory data. And doctors at the Cleveland Clinic were finding that even when their patients had had successful heart transplants and had to take an immunosuppressant drug every day for the rest of their lives, when they were switched to a Dr. Reddy's immunosuppressant, those patients were winding up back in the ER and the ICU with symptoms of organ rejection. So there have definitely been questions around Dr. Reddy's drugs. And I think one of the issues really for any healthcare system, New Zealand's included, is, you know, what are the incentives for quality? If it's just an incentive for a government-run healthcare system to purchase from the lowest cost supplier, then how do you guarantee quality in a system like that?
Here's an argument that I'm not sure I'm able to verbalize, but I've just been talking to a philosopher about utilitarianism. Mm-hmm. So I've got a certain amount of money to spend on my pharmaceuticals. If I substitute, and this is an argument that's used by our agency, if I substitute a generic, then I'm going to have, you know, several million dollars to spend elsewhere in the health system. Chances are that that generic is going to be fine. So if you start stigmatizing generics, you're making the whole health system suffer. How does that run with you?
Well, first of all, the chances are idea, that's if it's your health or the health of your child, that's not a very comfortable set of options. What I would say is, you know, we need verifiable benchmarks. So why aren't we monitoring patient outcomes? You know, do these generics, these low-cost drugs, come with a hidden cost? Is there an increase in relapses? Is there an increase in, you know, medical setbacks? Are patients who were previously stable unstable once they're switched? And, you know, remarkably, when I was doing this reporting and doing such a deep dive over such a long time, those studies don't really exist. I mean, there's been very little study of these. And what there's been is this sort of, you know, regulators telling patients all over the world that it's all fine. And they're telling them that on the basis of data that they've reviewed. And we know that much of the data is fake. So, wow, we need to fix this system.
Another substitution that was made here for a brand name epilepsy drug was Logem. And there's been a great deal of concern about this. There have been deaths that may or may not, investigations are ongoing, be linked with the drug brand switch, which MedSafe warned against, but nevertheless our agency Pharmac went ahead. The company Mylan makes Logem. What do you know about Mylan?
Mylan is also in my book. They earned a couple of chapters in my book. You know, they had a reputation throughout the industry of being a sort of white knight, that they were, you know, the company that was making all the right decisions. But lo and behold, they began shifting a lot of their manufacturing to India. There were whistleblowers inside of the company who alerted the FDA to data manipulation at their plants. And the FDA did go unannounced on the basis of those, you know, those alerts from whistleblowers, went into a plant in India and went into a plant in the US, and they found some very questionable practices. One of the practices is called crashing files, which is they were literally sort of shorting out their own computer software, almost as though they were trying to conceal evidence of data manipulation by corrupting the data. Because the thing is, you have to show regulators all of your tests. But if you're doing some testing in advance to see whether the drugs will pass, you want to erase evidence of that. So the FDA suspected that the way they were doing that is by shorting out their software. So there have been questions about, you know, the quality of their data as well. You know, I was first alerted to what was going on in New Zealand with the epilepsy drugs. I was contacted by a patient. Then I spoke with one of your very excellent investigative journalists, Guion Espinaire. And it's really kind of a classic case. I mean, the doctors who prescribe narrow therapeutic index drugs, so that's the drugs where dosing is very important, are very concerned about these substitutions. You know, it's not enough to say that the drugs are roughly bioequivalent because, you know, patients are really hanging by a thread. They could have seizures very easily. And my understanding is that is what has happened with that switch to a generic epilepsy drug. So, you know, for your regulator to tell patients, well, it's in their heads. Well, is it? Have they tested the drugs? Do they know that? That would be my first question.
Certainly in the instance of the drug I mentioned formerly, the replacement of Losec with a generic, AstraZeneca was saying that some people used to using Losec, which is a dyspepsia peptic ulcer drug, could suffer side effects by changing to a generic version. And Pharmac, our drug buying agency, said this is scaremongering tactics. It's very hard to sort out. I mean, obviously, the brand name pharmaceutical industry is going to say, don't use nasty cheap generics, use our drugs. But arguably, their greed brought on this huge boom in the generic industry. Do you make that connection?
Yes. Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the reasons that we're all in this situation is because of the crazy pricing from the brand name drug industry, and that we've essentially been forced into the arms of low-cost providers. But let me just say, as a journalist, because it is so hard to sort out, well, you know, are the brand name companies just making that claim, and how do you make sense of this war, you know, that looks just like a war for profits and market share? the way that I chose to address that is by really penetrating these manufacturing plants. Is there, in fact, something wrong? And yes, there is. The answer is yes. They are committing fraud in these plants. There is rampant data manipulation, and I know it because whistleblowers have provided me with documents and photographs. So, you know, we know there is a problem. And then the question is, how are we going to solve it?
I was going to say, on the most basic level then, countries such as New Zealand surely should not be buying drugs from manufacturing plants that have been exposed as negligent or incompetent or corrupt by the FDA, except can we trust the FDA to uncover it?
Well, that's actually a huge question. I think you can trust that the companies that they put imports alerts on and warning letters about, those plants really are bad. But there's a whole host of plants that really are bad, where their investigators have recommended serious sanctions, and bureaucrats at FDA, for political reasons, have decided to downgrade those findings. So that's another thing that I found, which is FDA investigators going into plants, finding very serious conditions that obviously violate good manufacturing practices. And then they send their findings back to headquarters and they say, this should be what's called official action indicated, very serious. We got it. This is an emergency. And then the bureaucrats back at headquarters saying, nah, we're going to downgrade it and make it voluntary action indicated. So in other words, just because a plant gets a pass from the FDA does not mean it's okay.
So as a patient, I cannot insure myself by finding out where this drug is made because there may be no available information on whether that manufacturer is good or bad.
Well, that's right. I mean, patients don't have enough information to independently make these assessments. You know, that's one of the biggest questions that I've gotten from readers is, how do I know my drugs are safe? So it was on that basis that I have tried to put together a guide for patients on how to investigate their own drugs, which is up on my website, KatherineEban.com.
We'll put a link to that on our webpage. Are you going to continue your investigation of the pharmaceutical industry generally?
Well, you know, I don't think I'm really able to stop, because since the book came out, I've been contacted by so many other whistleblowers. You know, there's just a lot of fraud because there's a lot of profits. And once you get well sourced in an area of reporting, it's sort of hard to just turn off the spigot, as it were.
I was interested in your description of Ranbaxy's generic version of Lipitor. Just to give us some idea of the money that's involved here, how much is spent on Lipitor, and how in the United States, how much is saved by the generic version?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have those figures available, but it is the biggest drug in the U.S., or it was for a long time. So it's billions of dollars in sales of brand name Lipitor, which is made by Pfizer. And when Ranbaxy got approval from the FDA to be the first company to manufacture generic Lipitor, and that is an incentive that's called first to file. You get 6 months of exclusivity on the market at about 80% of the brand name price before competitors come in. Ranbaxy made $100 million in the first 24 hours of sales in the U.S., and over the course of 6 months, they made about $600 million.
Extraordinary figures, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, this is real money.
Very good to talk to you. Thank you. Katherine Eban, whose book is called Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom.